Hello and welcome to the KC at the Movies podcast. It has been quite a bit since I've been on the old blower here. I have never called the microphone that, but okay, here we are. But we're back. We've got some movies to talk about. Might be a little late with a couple of these movies, but I thought this would kind of like work as like a little wrap up for April, because this is pretty much these were the big movies for April. If you want to count Project Tower Mary for the end of March, yes, you can. But end of March, beginning of April, like it's still set around there. So this is pretty much what the big ones were. I didn't see The Mummy, and I didn't see Michael, because I was just, you know, not interested. So yeah, we'll start with Super Mario Galaxy film. I saw this with my sister and my brother because we're big Nintendo fans. I believe I saw the first one with my sister. I think my brother was working at the time, but I saw the first with my sister, and she wanted to go see this one. I mean, actually, really, my brother wanted to go see this one, but we dragged my sister along again because why not? Make it a family affair. Look, I knew what I was getting into when I was watching this film, when I was going to watch this film. The first one is, it's a film, it's a movie, it's something that exists. I enjoyed references. It was like key jangling for a baby, and I was the baby because I'm a big Nintendo head. That's what that was. That's what that movie was. I've never watched it since. I've suddenly seen it that first time in the cinema. Haven't watched it since, haven't even thought about it. And then it came around that, I think it was during one of the directs, that the next film was going to be the Super Mario Galaxy movie. And, you know, that felt like the logical next step was to make a Galaxy movie, even make a Galaxy or an Odyssey movie. Although, based on what was in this movie, why not just call it the Odyssey movie? Because there's a lot more Odyssey than Galaxy. I've played about a quarter of the first game. I think about a quarter of the first Galaxy game. Haven't played the second one, but I really, really enjoyed it. I've played Odyssey, and I recognize a lot of stuff from Odyssey. But I really enjoyed what I played of Galaxy. And I'm telling you, you didn't get much of that in this movie. You get Rosalina, you get the stars, and look, they're cute. But there's not really much going on. It's probably expected at this point that there is not really a plot here. It's just going to be a bunch of references and a bunch of scenes. But this one is like, the only thing I think I liked about this one more than the first one was they had more actual musical score and motifs. A lot of ones I did recognize from the games, and not just these random needle drops that they put in just to, you know, because sometimes it didn't even fit the sequence in the last one. But the only one they did have was that the one that Yoshi was, Biggie song that played when Yoshi was walking down the, you find out what was going on with Yoshi. Again, don't know why they played that, but it was in it. But that was it. It was mostly musical score by Brian Tyler, and I think it was Brian Tyler, and using motifs from the video games and creating musical score. So I appreciated that. I appreciated that aspect of it. Everything else, though, like Rosalina is barely in it. So Brie Larson's barely in it. Everyone feels like they're just fucking phoning it in. Like Chris Pratt sounds awful. Like he's not even sounding like Mario in that last one. Anya Taylor-Joy sounds like she's about to go to fucking sleep. And Charlie Day's still pretty good. Keegan-Michael Key's still pretty good. I enjoy Glenn Powell as Star Fox, or as Fox McCloud. And Donald Glover he exists as Yoshi. Yoshi, however the fuck you say it. He exists. I don't know why they got him. Star power, I guess, but, you know, a name recognition. Just kind of like everyone's just kind of asleep at the wheel, phoning it in. It was entertaining for, like, it was just like the first one. I was entertaining for the most part. I was, oh, no, Benny Safdie, I think, was the best voice actor in this one. Weirdly enough, Benny Safdie, director of Uncut Gems, Good Time, and The Smashing Machine. Was. And the co-creator of The Curse was... he was probably the best voice performance in the film. Everything else, yeah, highly forgettable. There could have been so much more cool shit going on, but yeah, highly forgettable. It's well animated, you know, but I feel like I'm just like scraping from the bottom of the barrel here with what praise to give this movie. It will entertain you for the 90 minutes. I think this one's a bit shorter actually than the last one. That's it. There's colors. You'll enjoy the colors. There's barely a movie here. It's just scenes stitched together. I will say I did like it better than the Minecraft movie. It's not, that is still one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But it still is just that kind of like super fast, crazy editing as well to just to wake people up and make them pay attention. And yeah, that's it. I don't really need to say much more on it. I'm trying to remember what I said. Did I say anything on Letterboxd? I don't think I said anything. Oh, okay. I actually did say quite a bit. I'm not going to repeat what I said. You're basically just flung to the next action sequence, and then that's it. Like, there's some talking, then you're flung to the next action sequence, and that's it. I'm fucking falling asleep talking about it. So, yeah, that's Super Mario Galaxy Movie. It was a movie. It was certainly a movie. Okay, moving on. Project Hail Mary. This is a film that is adapted from a book from Andy Weir. It's directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, which are the guys that gave us the Lego movie. They did not make the Spider-Verse movie. They did produce it, but they did not make it or direct it. But they gave us a Lego movie, Lego Movie Part 2, I think, and 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street. And now they've gone on to make pretty much their first big blockbuster film with this adaptation of an Andy Weir novel. The last one that we got from Andy Weir was The Martian, directed by Ridley Scott. And this one is Project Hail Mary. This is starring Ryan Gosling as Ryland Grace. He plays an astronaut that wakes up on his ship and finds out that his crew are dead. He's the only one left. And he is on a mission to pretty much save the world. Okay, where do I start with this one? I liked the movie. I didn't like it. I thought it was a very good movie. Don't think I'll ever watch it again, but I enjoyed it for the experience that it was in the theater. You know what? Let's just start with the positives. I thought it was a really solid movie, but my problem was it teeters on becoming overly sappy and sentimental. Like I kept calling it cute. I couldn't find any other word for it, but that's really the word that came to mind was like cute, schmaltzy. Like, it doesn't quite get to that point, but it is a really cute movie. Things are like, it's just all happy and wholesome. And, you know, there is some, don't get me wrong, there is some conflict, but it's mostly just like, you know, a lot of the stakes don't feel like they're the huge stakes because of the seriousness that the characters give it, especially the character of Ryland Grace. I think Ryan Gosling, I think, stops that character from being incredibly annoying. And I think he has the charm to pull off that kind of character. Because I attempted to read the book before I watched the film. Because my housemate told me, you know, it's a really good book. And he said, you should read the book. And I haven't had the heart to tell him. That I barely made it 5 pages because I was just not a fan of the writing and the character of Ryland, even though, you know, we barely even know who he is in those first 5 pages, but I just, the writing itself, I just wasn't a fan of Andy Weir's writing. It turned me off immediately and I was just like, oh no, it's going to be like this, is it? And then it was even confirmed by a friend that that is the book. Like, if you don't like that, you're not going to like the book because that is the book. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad I didn't waste my time with it then. Yeah, if you like it, that's great. That's fine. But it just wasn't my cup of tea and I knew I wasn't going to like the book, so didn't finish it. Like I said, it's a very good film. It is a very good cinema experience. I love how tactile the film feels, especially the space sequences. They kind of remind me of the ones in Interstellar, but they just looked fantastic. Like, I'm not sure if like miniatures were being used or they, what kind of filmmaking techniques were used to make them feel really effective. That the production design is just wonderful. The chemistry between Grace and the other thing that's in, I'm just going to fucking say it. You've seen this movie by now. There's an alien named Rocky. He is probably the best part of the movie, is this alien, Rocky. And I admired the puppetry that was involved with Rocky's part. I think there's only like a few CGI sequences when he's inside that ball thing that he rolls around in. I thought Rocky was really cute. That's the part that like worked for me, is that kind of cuteness. And that, because that's just natural chemistry between, I mean, I can't say natural chemistry, but it's just chemistry between these two characters, right? Your two main characters are a fucking astronaut and a rock alien. So I enjoyed that aspect of it, that core aspect of it. And I thought the voice chosen for Rocky was perfect. It ended up being, I think, the puppeteer itself is the voice of the of Rocky, which I thought was great. I love how the film is structured too. Using the structure to symbolize Grace's memories coming back. It was a little hard to start it because it just goes at first. And you've just gone from scene to scene to scene, and it felt a little bit like, you know, whiplash a little bit. But the way the film moves, you get used to that as it goes along. It was a little hard to get into it first, but once like I understood what was happening with the character and you know, what it all meant, I understood what was going on, and I was on board. I was on board with how it was going. And if you think of it in the way of him getting his memories back, that's why I like how that structure works. I think Greg Fraser's cinematography is excellent. I think it saves the movie from being a Marvel-looking movie, like that concrete kind of fucking dull brown-looking kind of look that we get with a lot of mainstream blockbuster films nowadays. Because particularly the grade in the past sequences, because we also change aspect ratios as well between the past sequence and the present sequences. And during those past sequences, you're finding out about how Rylan got onto the ship, or I should just say Grace, got onto the ship, and the journey leading up to where he is currently in this situation where he has to save the world. And they're very like the Marvel-looking kind of scenes. Like, I just don't get this fucking... I don't understand the cinematography nowadays with this fucking, how these scenes are lit and how these scenes are color graded even. Like, this is why I couldn't even get through the Wicked. I couldn't even watch Wicked because of its color grading. I really just couldn't get it because it just was so lifeless, especially for such a colorful looking movie. It just looked so lifeless to me. And that, you know, these past sequences are very kind of concrete looking. And I do think, like, you know, how he shoots it actually saves those kind of sequences as well. But then those present sequences are really some of my favorites because of, you know, Greg gets the shine and what he is so fucking good at doing. The lenses that he uses, the lighting that is used on the ship. I forgot what the ship is. Is the ship called the Hail Mary? I think the ship is called the Hail Mary. I don't know why, but I think I just got that. So the way that Greg Fraser shoots these sequences saves the movie from looking bland, in my opinion. That's just what my point there is. He saves the movie from looking quite bland, and he's just fucking great. He's so good at what he does. I think this is the reason why he's not shooting. This movie was the reason why he didn't shoot Dune Part 3. So I'm keen to see what Dune Part 3 looks like. Actually, I'm going to quickly just look up who he's shooting Dune Part 3. Because I know that he turned down Dune Part 3 to do Project Hail Mary. Fuck me, come on. IMDb, come on, don't let me down. I don't want to look too much into it because I haven't even seen the fucking trailer of this movie yet. Because I don't want to. Cinematographer. Ah, Lana Sangren. Okay, cool. Yeah, the cinematographer for Dune Part 3 is Lana Sangren, who's usually Damien Chazelle's cinematographer. He also recently shot Wuthering Heights, and he did Saltburn. So he did both of Emerald Fennell's movies. And Sangren is also a fantastic cinematographer as well, and really, really good with color. So keen to see what he does with Dune Part 3. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about fucking Project Hail Mary at the moment. Leave it to me to fucking talk about Dune Part 3 instead of Project Hail Mary in this podcast. So yeah, I loved all that. One of my favorite sequences in the film is, like, one of my favorite sequences in film in a long time is the astrophage collection sequence. Probably, I think, one of the best sci-fi sequences I think I've ever seen in a film in recent memory, probably ever as well. It kind of gave me that same vibe that when I watched Interstellar in IMAX a couple of years ago. And it gave me that same kind of feel and vibe, like that atmosphere. Yeah, I think that sequence is absolutely wonderful to watch. And the colors, especially I don't know if it's a cut or what happens, but like when this switch is turned on and you just get this whole screen is just covered in this redness and this amazing color. Yeah, it was just incredible to watch, especially on a big VMAX screen here in Australia. I just want to shout out Daniel Pemberton's score. It's really good. It works for all the moments that it works for. It was perfect for the moments that it did. I do think it gets a little overbearing at times. I do think we could have used a little bit of silence in a few sequences, but mostly Pemberton's score does really, really work, and I want to listen to more of it. I just haven't had a chance yet. And finally, I want to say, like, I understand the criticisms of this movie, like, ending three times, like, having multiple endings. And it could end in certain points. There are certainly some points during that third act and that last hour, where you're like, okay, you could end here. Okay, you could end here. Or you could end here. Or here. But the movie keeps on going, and it ends in a place where I think it actually ends well. I'm in that camp. I do think it ends well. I am mindful of those times where it could end, but I do think it ends in a really good place, because I don't think you complete Grace's arc without him going, doing what he does at the end. And, I think ending on where we end, especially where we end, is, definitely a have your cake and eat it too moment, but it was really, really cool to see that place. And given that, I was absolutely fine with how it ended and it ending there. Basically, it does end well. It's a very crowd-pleasing end as well. And it's one of those things where he's like, yay! And you leave the cinema like happy. And yeah. I think the main issue I have with it, this is something that I mentioned up top, just the taste and preference thing with me. Which, you know, I said it was a bit too cute for my liking. I don't particularly, attract's not the word. I'm drawn to movies that have this type of energy to them. I'm not like a cynical asshole. I don't like hate life or anything, or hate, you know, I do like some wholesome movies, but I do think even with those wholesome movies, you get real, real moments like, but I'm not saying this movie doesn't have real moments. It just has that kind of energy where everything's okay and everyone's happy and everything works out. And like, I don't know, that to me is just not as interesting as something that has a lot more of its stakes been taken more seriously, and not everything being undercut with a one-liner or a joke or something like that. So I just think it's just, for myself, it's just a taste and preference thing. Like, I explained this to my friend who's a really big fan of the movie. Both of my friends are really big fans of this movie, but I tried to explain to them that, like, you can't get me to like love it, because it's just a taste thing. And I get what, you know, I do get it. It's a Hope Corps film. It's, you know, it's the whole motivation is about, let's save the world, let's work together to save the world. But, just, yeah, a little too much for me. I just think it was a little too much. It feels very... What it reminded me of was a Mickey 17. The ending for that film, like, I kind of enjoyed the film leading up to that. Like, I it was all right, especially, but it was disappointing to me as a Bong Joon-ho film, I'll be honest. It was a disappointing film as a Bong Joon-ho movie lover. And it felt that the end of that movie like ends in like a really good place. And my friend who's just, he's into these type of movies, like he enjoyed that. He said, why can't you just have fun? And I was like, well, I can have fun, but I also want, I think I just want something more out of these movies. And I'm not getting it. I'm just not getting it. The ending is just very happy and very uplifting, and everything works out. And it just feels, the word I come up with, and I'm not trying to single out a fucking whole continent or, you know, but it just felt very American. It feels very this is a Western sensibility. And, you know, I don't need it to be like dark and dreary and like, no, he fails the mission or something like that. But it just, again, Mickey 17 ended in this way. This movie ended in this way where everyone was just great. It all worked out. And it just, yeah, I think I just crave something more. I crave something more from a movie. And I wasn't, ultimately, I came away from Project Hail Mary unmoved, and I just wasn't so taken by it emotionally. I didn't care about these characters. I did care about Grace and Rocky, but I just wasn't like so enamored with them, and I wasn't like I just wasn't taken by it. There you go. I just wasn't taken by it. I was not moved by the movie at all. just wasn't fully for me. Really enjoyable film. Loved it in the theater. Not loved it, but really liked the movie in the theater. But it is not a film I watch again, and just not my type of movie. So there you go. There's my thoughts on Project Hail Mary. If you loved it, that's great. It's really cool to have a movie like this. Like I said, it's really well made. I'm really happy that it exists for people, and it exists for movies in general, like especially the puppetry being used and the very little VFX being used. That's cool shit. I'm always going to, you know, I don't want a movie to be bad. So, it just wasn't for me. In the end of the day, it just wasn't fully for me. But moving on to something that was very much for me. I am so delighted to talk about Christopher Borgli's The Drama. I have been looking forward to this movie for quite a little bit. Christopher Borgli is a Norwegian filmmaker who he made Dream Scenario most recently before this one. This was also produced by Ari Aster's production company, Square Peg. I think him and Lars Knudsen. He also did a movie from quite a few years ago now. I think like 2022 or something like that. That I really, really enjoyed. Called Sick of Myself. And this movie is like, it still does have the Dream Scenario sensibilities as well, and the sense of humor and cringe. But I really feel like this felt more in line with the Sick of Myself kind of stuff. And that's the kind of stuff I like. That's the kind of stuff I like. So, The Drama, what is it? It's Zendaya. It's Robert Pattinson. They are a couple. They're about to get married. Zendaya plays a woman named Emma. Robert Pattinson plays a guy named Charlie. And they are about to get married, and the whole film is centered around something that is said by Emma during one of the nights where they're tasting wine for the wedding, and they sit down with a few friends, and Emma says something truly, in the moment, quite horrific, and that changes the entire course of their relationship with their friends, and the journey leading up to their big day. This might be my favorite Borgli. Like, I'm Sick of Myself is up there, but This might be my favorite Borgli because it has like everything that Sick of Myself has as well. And then it does have that kind of Western stuff he was doing with Dream Scenario, and more of the more cringy stuff with Dream Scenario, especially public cringe. But then you've got the amazing performances from Zendaya and Robert Pattinson. And I want to fucking shout out Alana Haim as well, but we'll fucking get to her in a second. But Zendaya and Robert Pattinson are absolutely so fucking good in this movie. Pattinson is just, he's always fantastic. Zendaya is always great too, but there's a particular, especially the scene where Emma reveals the information to people. And I still don't want to say it because I went into this movie completely blind. I saw like half of the trailer, I think, or the teaser trailer or the trailer where they are like dancing around the subject. And that's all I saw. I didn't want to see any more. And I went into this one pretty much as blind as I possibly could have gone in. And when the character reveals this information, I will tell you that this was, it was, wasn't even on the list of things that I thought she was going to say. Wasn't even, didn't even cross my mind that she was going to say this. Wasn't ever on the list that she was going to say this. That just boosted that moment more up for me. And then what this movie has to say about that particular topic, I found very, very, very intriguing and quite a fascinating topic to bring up and talk about, especially from the perspective of an outsider to the United States. I just found it endlessly fascinating. Like this subject, not even the subject matter that's brought up, but the actual situation that you are put in if you are even thinking about the subject. Like I said, I don't want to bring it up. Because I just think if you're listening to this, go into it blind. Go into it as blind as I can and just watch this film play out. And especially if you're a fan of Borgli, just you kind of know what you're getting into, but this one I think just doubles more on that. And I think it's the funniest one he's done as well. Don't get me wrong, there are some fucking hilarious scenes in Dream Scenario, but this one is definitely, I think, his funniest. It's helped by these just fantastic performances. Yeah, it's a much deeper film that offers a lot of discussion after the movie. I sat with two of my friends after the film, and we talked about what this movie was about and what it entails, and you know, the themes that were brought up during the film. We talked about this for like a good, for the whole drive home, and then like stayed in the car and talked about it more. Like, and even before we got in the car, we talked about it. And what would we do if our partner did this or said this? You know, how would we handle the situation? Whose side are we on? A very, very interesting discussion. Very fruitful discussion to have with your friends. Or to enjoy with, you know, like-minded people that went and saw the film with you. It's got great composition with the shots. I loved how he filmed this movie. And the editing is probably like one of the highlights of the movie is the editing. And I think having the framing device be Charlie preparing his wedding speech was a very good creative choice, or even just like choice in the screenplay, because it really helps the film move and get you up and running. Because you're in this framing device of like him devising the speech, him talking about, it's a great way to deliver exposition without it being explicitly exposition. And I thought it was just brilliant. I loved it. But the best part of this movie, before I get to that, I want to talk about Alana Haim. There's a character in this film that I think rivals villains in a superhero story. I think rivals the worst villains in movie history. Alana Haim plays this character, Rachel. She made me have a visceral reaction to this character of Rachel. Like it's one of those like me and my homies hate Rachel kind of thing. Like every time you talk to someone about this film and bring up, oh, and what about this character? Like, and they go, yeah, Rachel. And like their eyes light up, their face gets red. Veins are popping out of her head. There's a guttural feeling of anger within yourself as well when you bring the character up as well. Holy shit, I hate Rachel, dude. Oh my god. Because you hate her, because, and this is the brilliant part about putting this into a screenplay and putting this into this kind of story, because I fucking have known people like this. I have met people that are like Rachel. I used to know people that were like Rachel. Thank fuck I've cut them out of my life, but I've dealt with this person before. This fucking piece of shit. Oh my God, man. I like crazy reaction. Like, Jesus. But oh my God, she played it so, like, Alana Haim, like, well done. Holy fuck, mate. Well done. Because she's so good at playing that kind of person. And this is the best she's ever done it. And, like, the words being used, this is a credit to Borgli's writing as well, but, like, her language was used, certain scenes later on in the film where she is with her husband and Charlie, and then you're just like, oh, fuck you, oh, fuck you, oh, God, I've never wanted to fucking kill a fictional character so much. Dude, I was having dreams about her. I was having dreams about this fucking character. What does that say? I don't have dreams about characters, only my own. I've never dreamed about another character in something before. And I was having fucking, like, nightmares about this particular character. Holy shit. One of the best and worst parts of the movie is this fucking bitch. Rachel. Oh, man. I'm getting worked up. But, yeah. Props to Alana Haim. Props to Borgli's direction as well. Because my God, you've created 2026's villain. Like, if there is a list at the end of this year and it's like villain of the year or something like that, you know, if they do like heroes and villains of the year, Rachel is going to be villain of the year. She is going to be villain of the year. I guarantee you, if there is a list, any list like that is created at the end of this year, there could be a list created specifically for this. Just to name that this is the one of the worst fucking characters you've seen on screen. Anyway, wow, holy shit. And to add on to that, my favorite part of this whole entire movie is watching this with an audience, because, you know, when you go to the cinema and you watch something like a superhero film, or you watch like a big blockbuster action movie or something like that, and it's really cool to hear the crowd's reaction to everything. And then like, I'll never forget my experience with Avengers Endgame. I'll never forget my experience with Spider-Man No Way Home, or rewatching like Titanic, with everybody. But sometimes there comes a special experience, especially when you're watching like a comedy movie and you get to laugh with everybody. I have never had the opportunity to laugh and cringe with people before. And the drama finally gave me that experience, because the best part is actually being there with people in the same room as you, seeing these same scenes, reacting them in kind of the same ways, but sometimes different ways as well. And just also gauging everyone's reactions and seeing what people are, what things they're reacting to, what gets them, what doesn't get them. Certain scenes were just made so much better with that theater crowd. And especially that third act. Like, when you get to the wedding, there are things that happen in that scene, in that whole sequence, I'll say, sequence of scenes, that people were like, my friend was like, she was like crawled up in her chair. My other friend was like sliding down the other chair. I was like saying out loud, holy shit, stop, like, no. And I'm not normally like that. I love that type of stuff. I love the cringe. There is guys in front of me, like grown men, saying, no, 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 please stop. Oh my God. Like, these, just hearing this stuff, right? It's just makes it so much more magical. And especially like a movie like this, like a small, drama from A24. Drama from A24. With a kind of well-known director. I think only like film buffs will really know who Borgli is. Like, your average Joe is not going to know who Christopher Borgli is, but I guarantee you there was some people in that cinema that night that just walked in because they said, oh, Zendaya, Rob Pattinson, like, you know, because, you know, a lot of people do see the stars and they just go, oh, yeah, I'll watch that because that person's in it. And I bet you they had no idea what the fuck they were getting into. Well, people are complaining this movie's a fucking rom-com, and it's not. It's seriously not. I think the poster with them, like, happy at the wedding, but it's called The Drama. Like, it's in the title, man. It's called The Drama. Like, you, so you surely know that something's going to fucking go down. Something's going to happen. Yeah. Incredible, incredible movie. I can't wait to get this on Blu-ray. I really wanted to watch it again. But then, like I said, life just got, it just got very busy, and I haven't been to the theater since. Actually, that's a lie, because I will talk about that in a second. I haven't seen any new movies since. I'll say that. Seen any new movies since, with people. Yeah, this is probably my favorite movie of the year. I thought it was going to be tough to beat Nirvana the Band, the Show, the Movie, but this is my favorite movie of the year, I think, so far. Because just the experience alone was just so, so memorable and so special with everybody. And this is just all my favorite shit in a movie. Like, cringe, awkward scenes, great fucking performances, great editing, great shots, memorable, memorable sequences. And this type of humor, like, is just me. It's me. It's me. yeah. If you haven't seen The Drama, please go out and see it with a crowd. I would implore you to go see it with a crowd. I think by this time, the time this podcast comes out, it's not going to be out anymore. But if you can, if they're going to play it again, if it's still playing, it was still playing at my cinema last weekend. So if it's still playing, go see it with a crowd. Do not wait for this on streaming. Do not wait for this to go see this at home. Please try and find a crowd to watch this with, because I can guarantee you it's going to be a much more special experience. That's The Drama. Oh my God, man. Incredible. Loved it. Okay, in terms of what I've been watching, I haven't been watching much. I've been playing Pokopia. I have rolled credits on that. Really, really good game. Probably my game of the year so far. But I just started Pragmata, and that is probably my second favorite game of the year so far. Granted, I haven't really played that much new games. Pragmata is also really, really fun. And if you think about getting Pragmata, try out the sketchbook demo first and see how you go. Because I played the sketchbook demo, and I tried to get all of the different endings you could get and different times you could get and drawings you could get on that one. And I loved it so much, I just pre-ordered the game, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. It's a completed game. There's no fucking bugs or anything like that. It's crashed once for me. But that's, you know, that's out of 7 hours of gameplay so far. So just absolutely chuffed with the game. Capcom is another win for Capcom, in my opinion. I think they've already sold over 800,000 units or something, or almost 1 million. Capcom's having a great year so far. This Resident Evil Requiem, Capcom is having a banger of a year so far. And I think it's going to be tough to beat what these games are. What do we got coming out this month? James Bond 007, I think, in May. And then the Batman. Oh, and then Forza Horizon 6 as well. Oh, okay. That could be good. But right now, Capcom, I think, has the crown. And fucking Nintendo. Because Pacopia, holy shit, man. I'm not going to get into Pacopia at the moment. I'm not going to get into it, but holy fuck, what a game. What a fucking game. So much more than I expected. So much better than I expected. So much love and effort put into it. What a fucking game Pacopia is. I'd be absolutely shocked if this is not on the Game of the Year list at the end of the year. If you love Pokemon, especially if you love Pokemon, and if you love Minecraft and Animal Crossing, maybe it's time to buy a Switch 2 and get Pacopia, because you're gonna get all of that, 3-in-1. And on Switch 2. And then you get to, experience the other Switch 2 games. Granted, there hasn't been much so far. And in fact, it's been quite disappointing what the Switch 2 has done so far. But it's been not until now that it's been fully realized. And it's just, such a joy to play it. I think I sunk, almost 90 hours so far into this game. I played this game for 13 hours straight the other day. That is insane. That is insane. The last time I did that, I think, was during the pandemic when I played Elden Ring with my friend. And we played from 7 p.m. till 7 a.m. or something like that, or 8 a.m. And that was the fucking, you know, the reason was the pandemic. We couldn't fucking do anything. We couldn't go anywhere. But I had worked that week. And then I played this game from fucking midday to like 1 a.m. in the morning. And I didn't even move. I moved to have lunch and everything and you know, have a meal and all that stuff. But I didn't even move from that fucking spot, man. That was crazy. I don't know if I'll ever do that again, but that was crazy. 13 hours. I'm almost fucking 30. I thought that was a young man's game, you know? So Pacopia is game of the year so far. If you've got to play something, it's Pacopia. And Pragmata, but Pacopia, holy shit, play that. Anyway, moving on back onto movies. The thing I did watch, though, and I briefly talked about it when I was talking about the drama, was I went to that Tower Cinemas that I've mentioned before in this podcast, and I got to see Mulholland Drive for its 25th anniversary, I believe, on the big screen, slowly getting through my David Lynch filmography before I start Twin Peaks Season 2, or Twin Peaks, sorry, not Season 2, Twin Peaks The Return. And watch more of his movies. So I watched Fire Walk With Me last time in cinemas. And then, we went and checked out two friends of mine. And I went and checked out Mulholland Drive. And I've got to tell you, and I hope this doesn't sound like hyperbole. It's going to sound like hyperbole, but I can't help it. I think this might be one of the best movies I've ever seen. It's one of those movies where the more you think about it, the better it gets. And then you just let it marinate in your head for ages. And more is mined and unveiled about it that you just weren't even sure existed in the first place. Especially when you watch it for the first time and then just let it just wash over you. And then you just get to still live in that world and still live in the movie, you know, the movie world. And just pull it apart and understand it more. And because it's saying so much about, you know, especially about the entertainment industry, Hollywood in general, Lynch as a creator, not just how women are treated in the industry, but just how people are treated in the industry, how disposable they are in the filmmaking industry, the Hollywood machine, if you will. Yeah, I found this movie just endlessly engaging. It is a trip. It is a dream. It does feel like a dream watching it. I just loved everything about it. It was an immediate 5-star. I was like, I just loved everything about it. It hit me the same way that Fire Walk With Me hit me, but like also in a different way because there's different emotions and feelings that you feel with Fire Walk With Me. With Mulholland Drive, I felt different kind of emotions, but it's that same kind of impact, that same kind of like, holy shit, man. Like, this Lynch guy, he's onto something. He was onto something with this. I just seem to love everything he's done. So I think I need to keep watching this guy's movies. You know, it feels bittersweet watching his films, engaging with his art, you know, long after he's passed away. Like, he passed, I think, not last year, the year before, right, in January? And I remember that death hitting me in a way where, and I'm not sure if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but when Lynch passed, it actually did really affect me. I was, you know, I hadn't seen much of his stuff. At that time, I'd only seen him in interviews and talking about his art, and I'd read some excerpts and articles and stuff like that, and watched his documentary, The Art Life. I'd watched his Dune, his version of Dune, which I admittedly nearly fell asleep in. And it hit me. It was one of those, it was the first celebrity death that hit me. I didn't think it would. And I remember just being, for a few days, just being kind of lost and being, because I didn't engage with these, like, It's hard to say that I didn't engage with the art because I engaged with how he approached art and how he, his way of filmmaking and his way of telling his stories. And that was incredibly inspiring to me of hearing how he did it and how he approached it. But now finally experiencing posthumously his art and trying to understand it is just like has unlocked a whole level of the understanding of this man as an artist and as a, I think now, like, profound inspiration on what I do and what I want to create. I think the word I can arrive at is bittersweet because it is still powerful. Even though he's not here anymore and he's not ever going to create something ever again, that I can still experience his power through the art that he has left behind. And I think Ryuichi Sakamoto has a great quote about saying that, and I don't know if I'm doing this verbatim, but I remember hearing him talk about it. He says that life is short, but art is long. And it could never be more true in the sense of, especially talking within the context of Lynch, that yes, he's gone, but he does live on through his art, and we get to still experience a part of him through the stories he left behind. And it's really fucking special. That's really special. And I hope that I can even, my hope as a creative, as a filmmaker, is even when I'm gone, that I get to leave that same impact on people. And, you know, I don't get so wrapped up in legacy and things like that, but I do want to make an impact with my art. And if that changes anybody in any way, you know, that's kind of like the cherry on top, you know, that's the kind of, it's the thing you can only hope for. So that's what I strive to do with my art and with the things I make, with this new short film I want to put out, with my feature, with the book I'm writing, just with this, you know, I consider this a creative venture. So yeah, just if you're listening, thank you for engaging with the art and engaging with my art, because when you had the privilege to engage with something like Lynch, someone like Lynch, it leaves an impact. It does leave an impact. And I hope, like, I'm not saying that, you know, go out and change the world or anything like that, but, I do hope that it does leave something in you, I guess that's it. That's all I want to say. I think that's going to do it. I'm going to leave it there. I don't want to leave in such a somber note. That felt really weird. I didn't think that was going to happen. I really didn't think that was going to happen, man. I'm sorry about that. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Something I want to just bring up as well before I wrap up here is I did record a podcast about the Moment, the Charlie XCX film that came out in February, that I watched recently. And I filmed a podcast, or I recorded the podcast rather, when I was away. I said I was going to be away for a bit. And when I was away, I did record a podcast talking about that moment. I think I talk about the Oscars too, but the thing I want to preserve, the thing I want to just still put out there is my thoughts on the Moment, because I do think they were good. I was happy with how I thought my review on the Moment, you know. So I was talking to a friend of mine and he said, just put it out there. Just do it. Like, the audio quality is not great, but you're a real one if you can listen to it and, you know, engage. So I'm going to put it out there. It's going to be an episode. I've already edited it and done everything. I just haven't put it up yet. So along with this one, along with this episode, I will put that episode up as well. So there'll be a little bonus episode when this goes up. In terms of future episodes, like I said, the rest of this month, well, it's May now, but, I think Mother Mary's the only one. Oh, Obsession as well. Obsession. I want to talk about Obsession when that comes out too. But, I've got a busy couple of weeks, so I don't think I'll be back for a bit. We are going to get back into Resident Evil. We just took a massive detour, like I said, because of just life. My personal life was getting a bit really, was getting a bit busy, we'll say that. And there's been a lot of commitments that I've had to do and go and attend to, I guess. Like, I haven't been able to, like, work on my short film. I haven't been able to write the feature, write more stuff. I haven't written since my little time away. So we're going to return to that. We're going to return to the stream, probably not next Friday, but the Friday after, because the next Friday is another big weekend that I've got in the calendar. So we'll get back to that. We'll get back to Resident Evil. I haven't forgot about it at all. But we'll get back to Resident Evil. If we don't talk about it on the next podcast, we will definitely talk about it on the podcast after. And then we'll really start our journey. Okay? You've got a guarantee there. You've got a guarantee there. Yeah. That'll do. That'll be it. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Follow the socials. Reach out for Instagram. Everything's in the show notes. And I look forward to the stream coming back. Look forward to more Resident Evil. Look forward to the Resident Evil journey we're going to go on. And, yeah, have a great rest of the week or whatever it is you're doing. Have a great day tomorrow, today. Have a great day every fucking day. appreciate you. And I'll talk to you next time. Take care.